Hey everybody, it's Daryl.
And Clint.
And we are back once again doing another podcast in the car on the way to the airport, giving you our thoughts on the Fringe panel, which we literally walked out of about 15 minutes ago. And man, oh man, I may have said the Fringe panel. I meant the Fringe press room. Whatever I said, the Fringe press room. After the panel, we were invited to go over and participate in that. And man, oh man, was that a treat or what?
It was one of those things. I can't imagine that ever happening again in my life.
Yeah.
Time, you know, just having lived with these characters for so long on this show, and then yeah. And then getting to meet the actors that portray them. Now, Daryl, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that of J.H. Wyman, Lance Reddick, Jessica Nicole,
right.
Anna Torv,
yes. Josh Jackson.
Josh Jackson and John Noble.
Right.
All of them touched you.
Josh didn't.
He grabbed the other guy almost by the throat.
He did. He touched
the other guy. I guess it's a good thing.
I said,
but Anna touched you twice, so that counts.
She did.
Right.
She touched me twice. No, I sat in the way it worked was it was round tables all around the room, and there were about 8 people per table with an empty chair. And we were the first to our particular table, so we sat next to the empty chair knowing what it was going to be used for. And they were all just very friendly and engaging. So, you know, I'm never washing my shirt again, though.
That's true. You shouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it won't be any different than your normal body odor.
I normally don't do laundry anyway, so it should be no different.
Man, what a treat to get that kind of time with all of those guys. I mean, that was really an amazing experience.
Yes.
I thought, you know, a lot of interesting information about the 5th season. Kind of going into it, we knew that they weren't going to answer, you know, questions directly pertaining to the 5th season, but they were able to answer, you know, kind of, you know, what do they think the legacy of the show was? I thought that was a really good question. And,
yeah.
And where did they want their characters to progress?
Yeah.
At the very least. And, you know, how did they feel about the 5th season?
Yeah, it was really good. And Lance Reddick talked a lot about what he hopes the resolution of his character will be. Anna Torv did the same. She even talked about, you know, what resolution versus...
conclusion.
Conclusion, yeah. And she wants resolution.
Closure.
You're right. So they just really did a good job. You know, we only had a couple of minutes with Josh, but he gave 2 answers. They're really, really well thought out and well constructed answers. You know, you can tell these guys get asked these same questions all the time, you know, for the most part, and they have answers prepared, but that doesn't mean they're not sincere answers and really, really good answers anyway.
Yep. Probably some of my favorite comments came from John Noble about the movie.
Yes.
So look for those.
You know what? Here's the thing, Clint. While I was walking back to the car, Clint and I walked back to the car separately. I was checking Twitter. Twitter is just blowing up with a Fringe movie already.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
You're going to hear a little bit of a different side of that. That was mentioned at the panel today. And so you'll hear what was said at the panel in that podcast. And then in this one, you'll get to hear John talk about it in the get a little bit different side of it.
That's right.
It's great. Yeah.
Definitely worth the price of admission. Yeah. That's why we're going to be charging $10 for this episode per download. If you want to download it twice, we'll give you a 50% discount. So, no, none of that is true.
Yeah.
Hey, we really appreciate the opportunity to come here and represent all you listeners here at the San Diego Comic-Con 2012. And without further ado, we'll hand it over to the stars of the show.
Yeah, and you'll hear Lance Reddick first.
So.
Hi.
I just don't want to know in general the feeling about this winding down. I mean, after 5 years now, into this.
Well, I'm, I don't want to try to speak for anybody else. I'm excited about it.
Really?
No, yeah.
I want to do something else?
Well, no, I do. I mean, I'm ready to play another character because... and form and function, Broyles has been similar enough to Daniels that I feel like I've been playing not the same but a similar character for the last 10 years, so I'm ready to do something else. And even though I've gotten to play other characters kind of intermittently, and at the same time, I'm excited because I think the finale is going to be so great. I mean, this last season is really going to knock people's socks off. Yeah.
How do you feel about playing older Broyles in the future, 2036?
Oh, well, I think playing the older Broyles, particularly given I almost feel like I shouldn't say this, particularly given what I've recently been told about some of the developments my character is going to go through. I'm really excited about it. It's going to be an interesting challenge playing older, not just because of the makeup, but to try to make him the same guy and yet older. Is yeah.
Do you know how everything's going to end?
No, I don't. No, I really don't. I'm uh-huh. Just tell me. And, I mean, if I did, I can tell you.
I really don't. Do you hope that like all answers are resolved, or do you hope it's open ended, or?
Wow. You know, with a show like Fringe, especially if John's speaking into the universe about there being a movie comes true. It's always nice if there's like at least one answer that's, or at least one answer that's not answered, yeah. One question that's not answered. Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned in the panel that Alt Boyle seems to be conflicted, I think was the best word you could say about
yes.
his character.
Yeah.
Now, we saw in 2036 last year there was some conflict of a different nature between you, your character, and the Observer character, the head
yes,
Observer
yes,
character.
Yes.
Do you see some more of that conflict? And what I mean by that is, Broyles, it seems like he's always got this, he's trying to do the right thing, but it's putting him in bad circumstances. Do you kind of see that happening in the future with your character?
Yes.
Yeah?
I mean, there's nothing to put it.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, he's already, I mean, if we're going to be more or less starting off where 419
yeah.
ended, you've already got Broyles basically kind of, it's kind of Vichy France, you know, right. collaborating, you know, trying to be a cop, but at the same time collaborating with the occupying force.
So in the last two instances, Alter Broyles and before got chopped into pieces, and then in the timeline yep. reset, he got put into prison. Are you hoping for a better ending this time, or are you satisfied with those endings?
Well, season three, I was really mad.
Yeah.
It wasn't even just that. It wasn't even so much that he died,
yeah.
but that he died so soon.
Yeah.
I mean, see, I'm afraid of saying what I want, because then if it happens, it's going to be like I gave a spoiler away. What the heck? I'll just say it. I'm kind of hoping for a heroic death.
Okay. Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's kind of what you got the first time, though. You
no,
sacrificed.
No.
You don't think so?
No.
I thought
no,
so too.
Oh, it looked like that? Okay, because I argued with Joel.
Yeah.
For the
yeah, so Olivia could get back over.
I went back over. Joel and I went back and forth about that over and over again, because I really, that didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, well, he was right. Which is good. Yeah, which is good.
He wants to call him
officer? No, because he'd be mad that I'm saying this. And he is my boss. I mean, well, you mean when we were when I first got the script for 419, or about this fifth season?
What do you think about the idea of jumping so far forward in time?
Well, I think the idea of jumping so far forward in time in the show is really cool. I mean, it wouldn't have, partly because I'm not a writer, but it just wouldn't have occurred to me. And you know, it'll be the third time we've done it in the show. And each time, there's something else wrong with my character. And I can't even remember. I can't even remember if in 419, I had something wrong with my eye. I know I did in...
You did the last
in the
season.
Third season.
Yeah, you did. I don't remember that in the fourth season.
Okay. Yeah. No, okay. Oh, good. So I don't have to worry about that for the makeup.
Pretending like the bishops are not, she's not related to them, like that's her secret identity. But to me, it seems like Broyles has to know who she is, right?
I can neither confirm nor deny those reports.
Okay.
How tough is it to work on a show that is shrouded in such secrecy?
Well, you know, the first time I had this experience was on Lost, which is.
Yes.
The JJ show, and that was bizarre. Well, I shouldn't say it was bizarre. It was bizarre for me because I'd never had that experience before. You just get used to it. I mean, it's not like Anna Jana Josh, who does so much publicity all the time, all year long, that they always have to think about what can I say. So it's a little easier for me.
But even if you're walking down like the street or talking to your friends, do you have to hold off?
Well, I mean, I will sometimes. If I'm excited about something, I will talk to my. If I'm talking to my kids, I'll start saying something. Oh, and you can't tell anybody. I'm serious, Chris. You cannot tell any of your friends this because I'll get in trouble. I say, okay, Dad, I won't. But yeah, I'm pretty good about it. Not with that, so I've never gotten in trouble. I did slip up, I feel like it's safe to say now. The first episode of Lost that I did, I got the script and we were still shooting the last couple episodes of The Wire. Mm-hmm. And for some reason I was staying in a hotel in Baltimore. And I say for some reason because usually I stay with my parents because I'm from Baltimore. I misplaced it. Came back to the hotel room to pack up, and I couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. And the way they give scripts out in Lost is every single character, even if it's a guest person, recurring role, has their name on the script, and it's written diagonally embossed on every single page. So it's not so with The Wire. If I have like something happened to my script, I'd say, "Oh, can I get another script?" And they just send me another script with a little thing that said Lance on the front. So they were like, "Where is it? Because we can't work." And so I was scrambling trying to make. I couldn't find it. Yeah. To this day, I don't know what happened to it.
I'm curious about as a whole, what do you think Fringe as a series, as a piece of television, has sort of been its accomplishment as a show?
Wow. What is Fringe's accomplishment as a piece of television? Wow, I don't. only because, you know, we're in the wake of X-Files and Battlestar Galactica, and so and each of them redefined science fiction television in a completely different way, and at the same time, Fringe is a completely different kind of show from those two. So I feel that science fiction as an exploration of human relationships. I feel like we are more than any other show. I mean, intimate relationships.
Thanks,
okay.
You guys.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, no, thank you.
You're on a roll.
Thanks.
You're on a roll.
That will become my stereotypical question.
Yeah, I'm sure we're
going to
get asked for something.
Hi.
Hey,
how you doing, Joe?
Good, how are you guys?
Good.
Good.
Hello again.
Hello.
I'm going to hit you with right away.
Okay.
I announced it's going to be my stereotypical question throughout this entire session.
Okay.
As a piece of television, what do you think Fringe has accomplished?
Okay. That's a... here's what I think it's accomplished. On a physical, on a nuts and bolts level, it's shown how important media is. It's shown how important social networks are. It shows how it's important grassroots campaigns to keep shows on the air. Now, fans are relevant. Fans are really important. And I love that, you know, because it puts the power in their hands, you know, because Fringe is the quintessential example of how, you know, something that should not be here is still here because of the fans and the support from the media. So, you know, Kevin wasn't kidding. It's not a business of losing money. We all know that.
Yeah.
You know, how many shows that we all loved that got canceled, you know. So on a level, I think it's a really important time for social media to show the influence that it has and you know, that people can kind of unite. And I mean, some of the things our fans came up with are absolutely astounding. You know, I was just sitting in my office going, what? They did what? You know, that's genius. Wow, you know. And you realize they're listening. At first, they said, we don't care. You know, like, we don't care about DVR. It means nothing, you know, but it's not true. Now it does mean a lot. They're having focus groups about DVR and everything. It's going there, you know? So that was, I think Fringe is important in that benchmark. Well, you can imagine it's very impactful to me because, personally, because that meant a great deal to me. And that image came to me in a dream. Yeah, and it meant something. And it meant what I was trying very hard to get what was in my head onto the page for White Tulip. And I did. And I think I did. And yeah. And it meant hope and just that it's okay and that we're, you know, this concept of, I don't know what the hell's wrong with the world, but there's some method of peace that I can find and belief in something good. And I was really, really adamant about getting that out. So I was very moved because, you know, what started as a little, you know, something in my imagination, I obviously has touched them. And that was beautiful, you know. And it really was. It really was.
Favorite episode of Fringe, still.
Thank you so much.
It's a great episode.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. Well, you're going to love this season. Because it's, you know, one of the things that we get to do this season that, you know, we didn't before. It's because the nature of television, episodic television, as you guys know, it's like 1 week Olivia feels like I'm mad because my boyfriend split, and then the next week she's like, you know what, I got this growth and I'm concerned about it. You know, there's always like a different, like, let's invent a drama, you know, that she could have that makes you interested, that goes on the case of the week, which is sort of boring, I think. You know, I'm a feature film guy, so I'm always trying to think of, like, well, what am I really trying to say? You know, what am I really trying to say? You know, and this season I have 13, so I'm looking at it like a saga. Okay. That there's an odyssey for Peter, an odyssey for Olivia, and an odyssey for Walter. That you guys can comprehend and get involved in, and watch and sort of watch it play out. Whereas there's a consistency that you'll be able to see episode to episode where they're going, where they're moving. You know, and feel with them. But a lot of the heart that was in White Tulip and things like that comes from things that have been built up. Like, I was only able to really maximize White Tulip because of all the things that came before it, you know, and using Walter to sort of say, I'm going to deliver a letter. Well, if you guys didn't understand how important that letter was and what the information was, it really wouldn't have meant the difference whether it was delivered or not, because you wouldn't care. So it's kind of like a creative jujitsu, because I'm using what you guys know for my favor. But so this season is that. This season is definitely everything you know about Fringe is coming back for a love letter that I'm trying to give the people that I love back. And all those things that you thought that you forgot, or things that you thought meant something and then are recontextualized, they will all come into focus. And I just want to leave the show with what I would want, you know, from a show, because I'm a fan of TV. You know, I don't want to spend 4 years of my life and then go, wait, what? Like, what? This sucks. Like, this doesn't click. Like, I'm so angry, you know? Yeah. Like, I'm driving to work the next day pissed off. So I wanted to say, okay, well, what I would want is I'd want to have a feeling of, like, oh my God, I just watched everything come into its own. And it all sort of makes sense, and everybody gets what they deserve in one way or the other. And I'm just like, oh, that was beautiful. I'm so sad. But I can still, when I'm driving to work the next day, I could think, you know, I can imagine their lives. Like, I can imagine how they're doing. You know, I can imagine them going on. And that's the kind of thing, that's the reason why I'm in this business, is to make people forget about their own troubles for a while and realize that, you know, tell a beautiful story and hopefully it'll affect them. And, you know, and I want to take it with me. So I want to be the gift that keeps on giving with Fringe, that you remember it fondly and go, yeah, it had its stumbles, and it, like any show, and it had its trials. But the way that it ended was, you know, awesome. I felt something, you know. So you're with me. So you know, that's, yeah, good.
What I was moved by is actually, I will tell you, the first time I watched season one, I thought it was okay. However, once I finished season four, I went back and watched season four, I was like, this is amazing. So, I don't know, did you kind of know that you were leading, like, how this all was going to tie together?
Yeah.
Like, really tie together.
Yeah, I came in episode 15 or 14. Okay. That's when I came in. Because the show was sort of, I guess it was kind of more like an X-Files type of thing. And it's funny because I had never really written anything about science fiction. You know, I was more of an existentialist. You know, I'm really into Albert Camus and stuff like that. So I'm sitting there going like, all right, you know. But then I started kind of getting into science fiction, and I started realizing, like, you know, Isaac Asimov and who the hell that great writer was and all these incredible things, and you're like, wow, these guys are like geniuses. And I realized that the more science fiction it became, the more about humanity it was. So existentialism is always at the root of all their science fiction anyway. It's all about being a better human being and how much knowledge is too much knowledge and all these great sort of thematic elements. And then as soon as I cued into that, I went, yeah, I'm done. I get it. So that's sort of how it sort of came to be, that sort of thing. So there are things like we didn't know. Like JJ will tell you that the amber on the bus was a weapon, you know, in season one. And you're like, you know, amber on a bus, how creepy. But then you realize, no, that's how you plug up holes in the Altairs. Yeah. Now, I would love to say that, wow, we thought of that way back. We didn't. Because like later it comes up and I'm like, okay, you know what, that's what it is. Sure, you know. So you start to kind of get things. But there are a lot of things we did set up thematically and things like that. So, I mean, to go through it would be kind of like a pretty long process, because there was a lot of things that, like, there are some things, like, you're going to see this season that I specifically put a fence around and said, nobody's touching this, because we need this for the final season, and it's very, very crucial. So there's a lot of unanswered things that you guys probably thought were threads that were let go, but they're let go for a reason.
Will all questions be answered?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, I don't want to, that's, you're really putting me on the spot for that. But the questions that I think are relevant, the questions that I think are important, you know, the ones that I think are, like, you know, there's still a lot of people saying, what was the pattern? But I answered that, like, way. You know, like, you know, and there's people saying, what's the pattern? I'm like, dude, like, watch season one and two. Like, it's over. The pattern's over, dude. We're in the other, you know, we're in the thing. So all the ones that are, because there's some, we got, like, our viewers are intelligent, and they're like, they don't let you go on a thing, and they see everything, and like, you did this, and you know, this is wrong, and you're like, well, wait. So all the ones that are, I think, are relevant, that I would want answered, I think are answered. But you'll let me know.
I have to pull you.
Real quick, do you know what Fox is going to do as far as the schedule goes? You guys obviously start.
Well, Fridays. Yeah.
Is it going to be a fall only?
They're
show?
Trying to give us as much, you know, look, we have no, they're huge fans, you know, in that building. So they're trying to give us the best we can and get. And we're going to have good chunks, like, you know, so you'll be like, oh, big runs, you know.
Okay.
So
it'll be through May or end in January?
I believe it's going to end in, I'm not sure exactly. Probably, what's it, January, right? Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, it's only the 13th, so yeah, there's not much. Yeah, I could find out exactly. I'll let you know if you want. Do you want to remind
Josh
me?
Josh is here, so I'll ask.
Yeah.
I'm going to move you. So.
Okay, but really, thank you so much, because this is the last time we'll meet on Fringe, with the exception of the TCAs. But just in case, you know, thanks. I really mean it, because I write in a vacuum. You know, I'm writing, like, in a room where nobody, I don't know if it's going to work, and, you know, and then it gets put out there. Well, yeah, but you guys, you know, like, I've never seen a show, like, with these numbers, last five seasons. I mean, it's a miracle, and so it's just a testament that you guys are saying, oh, you're helping, and you've been very forgiving when we didn't really deserve it, and you've found things when I think that they did have, you know, reason to be found and celebrated. So thanks for all of it, good and bad.
Thank you.
I really appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Okay.
We're pretty good, aren't we?
Yes, you're all right.
You know more about it than I do now. How you doing?
Hello, sir. I'm diving in with my question.
Yes, sir.
One question. Overall, because you had said it, I think it was at WonderCon, you thought you wanted the renewal because you thought Fringe was this close to becoming the greatest science fiction show ever. What I would, but what I'm curious also about, as a piece of television, what do you feel has been Fringe's accomplishment?
Been the top?
As its greatest accomplishment as a show, as a piece of drama?
Yeah, okay. Without question, it's been the nature of the relationship between the principal characters. That it's gone on this amazing path through the world of alternate science and the alternate universes and so forth. But the one thing that I think we do differently is we have these intense relationships. And certainly the big surprise to everyone was the relationship between Walter and Peter, particularly early in the piece. and then the devastation when that went away, and now what we want to do is to get it back again. I know that that resonated with the audience probably more than anything else. This desperate love affair between Peter and Olivia. Oh, God, you know, it's so sad. And yet you hardly understand how hard it is for them, that they want but they can't because of their personality and their inhibitions. That's a great love story. So you have that, you have these incredible friendships, and I mean, I for example, the friendship that my character has with Astrid, it's so beautiful. And we're also really good friends, so it's easy to play. The respect that, you know, I might have for Broz, it's, these are really rich interrelationships. That's what makes Fringe different from other shows.
How does it feel to see the end in sight then?
Well, it feels great because they've given us a chance to finish it. You know, seriously. So we can walk away, hopefully, we can walk away having completed the grand story, but also as an actor saying, I've just done the greatest thing of all time. I've just had a character that I was able to resolve and play for 5 years. It's sort of like doing an epic play that lasts for 5 years. That's also rare to have a character that doesn't become two-dimensional,
yeah.
and stay in one place. I'll feel like a very... When and if we achieve what we want to achieve, and we're going to have to work really hard to do it, then I'll be really satisfied.
John, you mentioned that in several interviews that you really wanted this fifth season because you wanted to resolve the character of Walter. You know, in your mind, how would you, you know, if you were given, you know, the pen to write Walter's story, how would that story look for you?
If a man, through his hubris and his misplaced love, his obsessiveness and his self-centeredness and his arrogance, performs an act which creates such havoc as Walter did, and then as a human being suffered the consequences of that with his insanity and his slow awakening again, then I reckon that there has to be eventually, as he has to pay the piper, he has to be responsible for what happened then. And we've had the things of him feeling sorry for himself. Okay, forget it. Anyone can feel sorry for themselves. But now he has to face it, look it in the eye, and do something about it. That would be a glorious character arc to take.
What about the difference between Walter that we know and are familiar with and the Walter of the future, who's very serious and very together and not crazy?
Well, we don't know that yet. And no, seriously. I have some really hard work to do to finesse it because I don't want to play that character for 13 episodes. I don't think that's particularly entertaining. I mean, it's a good character, but so that would almost make him into this really hard-ass character that doesn't care about human life, that doesn't feel great emotion and affection towards people. I'm not going to go there. So I've got to find a way to return to the more loving Walter whilst still having that political, that clarity of vision. That's my task. Oh Lord, that's. I don't know yet. I don't know yet. I mean, there's so many moments, and Walter's so complex. There are moments with Peter, at times. I think they showed a clip and reminded me of it. Was, "You're not my father." You know. Yeah. There was a moment we did with Walter talking to God in a chapel, mm-hmm. which was so rich. You know, and so emotional to play that stuff. The scene that I loved dearly was the Walter Walternet saying goodbye in the corridor at the end of last year. I thought that was a huge gift to me as an actor. There are a lot of them, and lots of funny ones too. But those, they are really deep. I'll remember those. Well, hopefully, but whether that, you see, I guess the link is whether that disruption, that tear in the universe, made it feasible, made us vulnerable to this movement from the observers. I think that's a feasibility. I think that's a possibility. So somehow or other, we need now to deal with the greater threat. The greater threat being, and this is a huge. It's sort of like a global threat thing we're talking about here. it's in the papers all the time. We're ruining our world, you know. It's sort of what, and we talk about it every day, don't we? Through global warming and through arms build up and so forth, we're ruining our world, and that's kind of what's happened. And we've made ourselves vulnerable because of carelessness to being taken over. And so now they need to find a way to bond, and to properly work together as a society to get back the world that they undervalued. Yes, and they will. Bear in mind that Walter started life as an old man, and I think what happens with a lot of older people that they reach a stage in their career and they lose confidence, they lose drive, and most importantly, they lose the sense of being useful. So if you talk to successful women and men who say, oh, I'm not useful anymore, and hence the depressions that come with that and that terrible deterioration that old age can be. I think Walter says to everyone, get up and do it. You know, you've got so much more to give. And that's a really important point to make, actually, in our society at present. You are useful. You are really useful. And it's gorgeous because the other characters treat him that way. So instead of being the silly old mad scientist, they really value his opinion as much as he may irritate them at times. So it'd be nice to go back to a world where people were valued as in their senior years, as they used to be. That's a huge... And that's, I know that's inspiring people because people talk to me about it.
You've gotten to work with Christopher Lloyd and Peter Weller. You even got to work with your daughter this last season. Anyone else out there you'd like to work with?
Oh, the list would be so long. The list would be so long. And I have not heard anything about guest actors at all this year. I heard one bizarre one. Okay, what was it? Oh, someone said Robin Williams wanted to come work with us.
Yeah, yes, I heard that too.
You heard that too?
I heard that too, yes.
Wow. Fancy trying to hold a scene with Robin Williams.
I'm not sure which one of you would be crazier.
I just do it, Robin, I'll follow.
There are the rumours of the movies and things like that. How would you feel
I started
about
them. Oh, okay. I literally did.
Do you want to carry it on?
Yeah, yeah. I sort of thought I'd start that rumour.
It's a good one.
Yeah, no, why not? And it was just, oh yeah, I heard about that. God, we better get working on it. Yeah. Well, why not? I mean, the interesting thing about Fringe is it says, oh, it's a low rating show, but when you actually look at the number of people that watch Fringe worldwide through all the different, it's massive. It's got a massive audience around the world. So as a film, it could, in fact, have an extraordinary success rate. Because it's huge in South America, it's huge in Europe, you know. So,
Is there a film like Timeline
if
you wanted to
be
in?
A what?
What universe or timeline?
That's a really good question. I'll have to think about that and start another rumour. Or perhaps we could do a franchise and do lots of them. Fringe 1, 2, and 3 in different universes.
Thanks, guys.
Fringe meets... I haven't finished yet.
Oh,
Fringe
meets...
You have to wait for the sequel. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Good.
Oh, no, tears.
I am suffering from an allergy attack.
Oh, okay, well, it's not
all morning. It started in the panel. It was so weird, you guys.
Yeah,
so much dust in there.
Are you allergic to geeks?
Then I must be allergic to myself.
All right, I've been kicking these off. I'll kick it off. I have the same stupid question. Overall, as a piece of television or drama, whatever it is, what do you feel Fringe's greatest accomplishment?
I don't think that the whole world knows this. I think Fringe's greatest accomplishment is the fact that it is a sci-fi show that's not really a sci-fi show. I think that that's the world that it's based in, but it's just about people who love each other and want to be happy and satisfied. It's like, you know, every romantic comedy or soap opera or, you know, 90210, you know, show in the world, but it happens to be in this world of sci-fi. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, think, oh, I'm not into sci-fi, so I'm not going to watch that. And I just think that they would be so shocked if they watched our show to see how well we've been able to integrate, you know, these, you know, kind of overwhelming things about technology and and corporations and medicine and how that's affecting our lives, and also how it affects our lives. Like these people, these very real people who have these intimate relationships with each other. And I know that there are other sci-fi shows that have done that too. But I can't think of any that have been on network TV. It's like such a perfect setup for new people who don't really watch sci-fi shows to be involved, and they've totally missed out. It's like the best kept secret in the world. Claire.
And how does it feel to see the end in sight?
Awesome. It feels so good. I think that we're all excited for what opportunities are going to come after Fringe, and hopefully we will all be fortunate enough to keep working on really great shows. But at the same time, we recognize the enormity of knowing that you get to finish telling your story, and nobody has to keep fighting, and nobody has to come back to work on Monday and wait to find out like what the numbers were for Friday night. We don't have to do that anymore. So it feels like this is going to be the easiest thing ever. Like all we get to do is have fun, and we get to tell a really good story, because that's the priority. You know, it's not, like I said, it's not about numbers, it's not about money anymore. They took all our money away. So it's just us and like a stage and a bunch of bald guys, and we're going to tell the best story that we possibly can tell. And you know, it's so funny because we all the actors at different points have kind of gone on roller coasters, you know, with their relationship with the show. You know, I felt like I didn't have very much to do for a lot of the time, and Anna, you know, was exhausted a lot of the time and felt like she was doing too much, and just lots of different experiences. But to come at the end of it and really realize that everybody's heart is in it and everybody has learned so much and enjoyed working with each other is such a special thing to share with a cast that you've been with for 18 hours a day for 5 years. It's just crazy. It's longer than college. Yeah. No judgment if it was not longer.
Now that you know that Walter actually knows what your name is, and he'll still continue to call you something else every week, why do you think that is? Your character's supposed to be like that?
He knows her name, and she knows he knows her name. I think it started in season two, and it might have been season one, I remember, but pretty early on, he said her name like one time, and then it took like, you know, 8 episodes, and then he would say her name, and he would do it periodically, and it was clear that he knows her name. I think that he is intent on saying her name wrong just to mess with her, but sometimes he forgets, like when shit gets real, and he's like, oh, we are really on something, Astrid. And he's probably like, damn it, I had the perfect nickname and I totally forgot what it was. That's what, I mean, I think that she, that's his way of showing affection for her. I don't think that he is comfortable, given his history with his son, in being able to communicate love very easily. And that's why he does weird things, like bakes, you know, cakes in the middle of the night and like tries to stuff candy down your throat. Like that's the only way that he knows how to show that love. And I think with Astrid, it's with, you know, calling her pet names, which is why I'm over the pet names.
It's gonna be been Claire, right?
Yeah. Well, Claire is a great one, but in the next episode, so one time we were in rehearsal, and we were just kind of like doing lines off the top of our head, and he didn't have a script, and he knew he was supposed to call me a nickname, and he just said Afro. He just blurted it out, and then everybody laughed, and I laughed, and then he came up to me afterwards, and he said, is that politically correct? And I said, that's not a bad word. I appreciate your Australian sensibility. you don't know, and I'm telling you that Afro is not like the A word or anything. And so in this next script, he calls her Afro. So nice. It's like full circle right there. Yeah, exactly. I don't want you to have high expectations because I don't, which is not to say that it's a disappointing thing because it's our last season and we only have 13 episodes, and I don't imagine that her storyline will be priority, but what I do hope, if anything, you know, does happen with her storyline, I just want there to be some closure with what happened to her dad. I don't know if, because the, you know, the fifth season is going to take place in the future, in 2036, but she was Ambered kind of like a last minute decision. So I don't think she said, "Dad, I don't know if I'm coming back." And I'm pretty sure that her dad isn't, you know, around in 2036. So I'm hoping that there's some kind of attention paid to the, because that's the first time you ever see her dad. It's the first time you see anybody in her family that she cares about. And so I think it would be a big oversight to just leave that blank. And I want at least just to see her going through some kind of, you know, emotional discourse about, what about my dad? You know, he's not around anymore. And that's so pivotal because when she meets the other Astrid, she finds out that her other dad had died. So I'm sure that that's in her head, you know, like, what happens to your family and what happens to you when they're not around anymore? So I hope for Astrid's story that that is the question that's answered for her.
So going into Fringe, like, before you even started, what were your expectations and what expectations did you never have that just sort of blew you away?
Expectation, don't get killed, happened. Expectation I didn't have, the biggest mind-blowing thing that I did actually wasn't the doppelganger stuff, but was the singing. I had no idea that we were gonna go there, and especially in this world. And I think that it worked out surprisingly well. Like it made sense that, you know, it wasn't so over the top and outlandish. But that was really surprising, and they did not have me singing in it. And you guys, I have a musical theater background. And so I wrote and I said, I have a musical theater background. I hope that you didn't forget that. And so then they wrote it in, which was really, really awesome. Yeah.
So a spin-off of choice, Farnsworth P.I. or Brown Betty, the Broadway musical?
Oh, Farnsworth P.I.
All right, yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys so much. It was nice to talk with you. Thanks.
Right here. Ladies and gentlemen, Anna Torr.
Hello. Hi. Now I just had a sip of coffee, and now I'm super close to you.
You didn't
I'm
bring us
sorry.
Any?
It was a treat. It was a surprise treat. I'm fine. Like, thank you so much. That's so kind. Right.
Diving in with my question.
Okay, hello.
One big question. Hello.
Yes.
Overall, as a piece of television, as a piece of drama, as a piece of sci-fi, what do you feel Fringe's greatest accomplishment is?
Fringe's greatest accomplishment?
Yes.
I think that, and this is not just because I loved doing that, but I think when we ended season two, and then when we began season three, and when our production team, our showrunners, our writers, our network, our studio embraced wholeheartedly the fact that we were going to spend half a season in the third year of a show that wasn't doing that great in an alternate universe, was kind of like one of the bravest things I think that people could do. And at that point I was like, oh, I'm damn proud to be a part of this. I think that was just unbelievable that they did that and committed to it. Didn't just give you a little taste, but went, we're going here, so come, you know, or not.
Right.
How does it feel to see the end in sight now?
It feels extraordinarily luxurious, to tell you the truth, that we get to actually start the final season knowing that it's our final season. Because so often you walk into it and you don't know, and you sort of like, I don't know, there's like a whole lot of stuff that goes on in your head. But I think for all the departments, for the writers and for the cast and for the production, there's like, you know, there's no excuse. Like, we'll be putting our whole heart into it and not taking anything for granted.
Do you hope there's closure, or do you hope it's sort of unanswered, or
I think because it's the end, I hope that there's closure. They're so funny because, like, closure and resolution are two very, very different things. And so I guess I should think about it. Do I want resolution or do I want closure? And maybe, actually, maybe for Fringe I would choose resolution and not closure. I don't know. For my life, I'd rather closure. I know. Good.
So my question is, the first half of season 4, you're playing most of the time, and
I wish I'd known that when we started. I thought we were going to go back. I didn't even know what we were going to do. Well, we didn't have the time. I mean, John and I sat down for a minute and went, so, okay, if Peter never existed, what? Okay, how? And then you're just like, oh my God, the street, like if you start pulling, you just, like, it's going to just unravel. But I didn't know until they wrote it that this was actually the real timeline. And I should say that too, it's too late now because it's done, but I would have really liked to have known that because I would have done quite a few things differently, actually, had I known that this was the Olivia and that there was like a void in Olivia as opposed to it just being a completely different timeline.
Like what?
Well, I think I would have played that. I think I would have made it a little more... I'm like a fan of magic and mystical stuff. Okay. I mean, I love sci-fi too, but I do love mystical, magical things. And I think that there could have been something really mystical and magical in that. Like, I don't know, I would have added some ticks or something where little thing, I would have been very conscious of what, of things that Peter had touched or Peter had done, and I would have played him in my mind a little bit more as like a haunted, I would have made it a little more haunted. But I didn't know, I thought we were just going to go back.
We did too.
Yeah. Good, well, we're all on the same page.
I thought it was the real time.
Really?
I was arguing with people.
Oh, well, good on you. Good on
we
you.
Had a banana bet. We did the Fringe podcast, and right. We had a banana bet. I thought it was a whole new universe that was going on. He thought it was a new timeline. I ate the bananas.
Oh, really? Yeah, how many?
Just three. Yeah. It's all right. It could have been worse.
As the central character of the show that's more than a little complicated and intricate, what has been the biggest challenge for you as for playing Olivia? Making the character quite so vivid.
That's so sweet of you. Like the greatest challenge, like keeping the things in.
Just, I mean, the whole show. I mean, created a really interesting, different character, and having that what was the challenge in actually being that character and sort of keeping true to the character as
she wanted. You know what? I think that this is the first time I've ever done anything like this and anything this long too, and so. The biggest thing I think for me was like learning how to make TV work for you, and because and I didn't know that, and it's so funny because you'd watch like I mean I watched John obviously from the start, and Josh too, who both have much more experience than I do, and it's only like, you know, it was like maybe a year ago or 2 years ago I was like, oh my God, that's totally what they did, and they learned how to. Not hijack, that's that. I don't mean hijack, but they learn how to kind of subtly push their agenda, because that sounds negative. I mean, this is a compliment, it's like a positive thing. They learn how to kind of like bring the bits that they want to bring, or how to plant seeds a little bit better, and I didn't have that skill. But I think what I then, and again, and it's like the alternate universe I keep talking about, but only because it was like, okay, I'm just going to jump. And then with the Bell stuff too, I'm like, well, I'm just going to jump, because the worst thing that can happen is that people are going to go, oh my God, that was so terrible. And it's one episode, go, like, move on. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And so this season, I haven't had Olivia to myself for a while. Like, I haven't had her, like, just her and I, 100%, all my heart focused on her for a couple of years. And I think that instead of, like, bemoaning, well, I've set this up or I've set that up, blah, 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 I'm just going to, like, go, let's just make her who I want her to be, because I don't think that she isn't there yet. She's not who I really want her to be. And so that's my personal challenge for this season. No matter what I get given, I'm going to just make her who I want her to be, so that then when we end... I feel like I've done her justice, you know?
That's great.
Yeah, because I just still feel like I just... haven't quite.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. I'm sorry I had coffee break.
You can't tell them.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Josh Jackson.
Hello, hello. Hey.
All right. We're on borrowed time here, so
I won't be needing these.
Time when we jump in.
Real quick, like, well, maybe it's a quick question. I don't know.
It's never a quick answer.
It's never a quick answer. Oh, good. As a piece of television, as a piece of drama or science fiction, in your opinion, what is Fringe's greatest accomplishment?
I think Fringe's greatest accomplishment, it's not unique in this, because I think all good science fiction accomplishes this, particularly in the television format, is having human characters at the center of a huge epic story, of really having a believable heroine, of having this beautiful father-son dynamic that is a very rare thing to put into a story. So I think that's our greatest accomplishment. I think I'm a huge, huge fan of science fiction, but the place I think that science fiction loses broader audience is when it gets too far into the geek and you lose the emotional core, the human core. And I think John, God love him, even as our show in the first year was floundering a little bit and trying to figure out what it was and what it was going to become, created this beautiful, human, broken, tortured, funny, witty, scary character that is totally unique and instantly relatable, which is like the hardest thing in the world to do. So, yeah, maybe that's our greatest accomplishment, is John Noble.
Great answer. Yeah, great answer.
Yeah.
And how does it feel that the end is in sight? And what do you hope from the end?
Well, I mean this in the most joyful way, which is why I don't need the tissues. It feels great. I feel like we got a grace note at the end of a show. I'm sure everybody here has been a fan of a show that got canceled before its time, right? Possibly several. And when you are a fan of a show like that, the feeling of loss is really acute, and it sucks. You're left without the ending of a story that you've committed. Like, for instance, let's talk about Game of Thrones. So I have a slightly obsessive problem with when I get into books, like particularly a series of books, I cannot put the fucking things down. And nobody told me that the story's not done yet and that he takes like 7 years between books. So last summer, I plowed through, what is it, like 9,000 pages of the Game of Thrones. And finally, you know, and I finally started being like, whoa, huh, that's weird. I don't feel an ending coming. And I got to the end, and the person who had recommended them to me was like, oh, no, it'll be like 10 more years. Like, what? I will have kids in high school by the time these are finished? Are you kidding me? So that is not great. So for us, you know, for a large corporate entity to give us, as the creative types on the show, to have the opportunity to finish our story in the way that we, and by we I mean Joel Weinman, wants to finish the story and say, which is one big thank you to the audience who has come with us for those 4 and now going on 5 years, it's the rarest of things. So that's why I don't need the tissues, because I'm stoked. I just think it's amazing that we have survived, thrived, failed, floundered, done all the things that can happen in 5 years, and we get a chance to end it on our terms. That just never, ever, ever happens. Even if we had known, you know, the last 2 years, there's been a contingency plan to end the show because we didn't know, canceled or not canceled, and we could have put a reasonably satisfying ending onto any one of those seasons, but you still would have had to jam the ending in. Now we have 13 hours to tell a whole ending to this story, and I couldn't be more excited about that. And Joel has been incredibly forthcoming about wanting us all, because in a way that a television show is the possession of the people who make it before it goes on the air, right? There's a beautiful, like, honeymoon phase on a new TV show when you post-pilot, pre-first air date, when it's just you. You're making it for yourselves, basically, because nobody else is watching it. There's nobody to pick it apart or build it up or tear it down or do any of those things. Well, that we're getting back to that place. It's just ours. And by ours, I mean those now who watch it and those who make it. It is ours entirely. Fox isn't going to pick us up, but they're not going to yank us off the air. Warner Brothers isn't going to commission more episodes, but they're not going to stop paying the checks. So we're here. This is like it's truly one of the rarest and most beautiful occasions that a TV show can have as a creative experience and hopefully as a participatory experience as an audience member. So I'm stoked.
I love it.
No tissues for me.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. See, I told you, no short answers.
They were good answers.